This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
High in the air, left center field. Oh, man. Clang for a 6-5 Royal lead. Bobby Witt Jr. snaps his 0-for-11 in the series. And that is the first earned run Yennier Cano's allowed all year. And he drives one to right field. And that is going to be the fifth Royals home run. Back-to-back home runs off a guy who hadn't allowed a barreled ball all year. What is going on today? 7-5. He's trying to put a ball somewhere in play. That's going to do it. Well, so much for the solos. The 11th home run of the game, and it's the first that's not a solo home run. Michael Massey, 2-2. Strike three called. And that ends the ball game as Kansas City storms back to win the final two of this series.
Here are the highlights, courtesy of Kevin Brown on Masson. And the Orioles actually hit yesterday. Unfortunately, they couldn't pitch, which has been an issue for them. They gave up 7 home runs, including 2 to Mikel Garcia.
Franchise record for the Royals.
Yeah, but the Royals hadn't hit 7 homers in a week going into yesterday's game. They hit 7 in the game. They beat the Orioles 11-6, take the final two games of the series, and win the series.
Look, you field a non-competitive group of pitchers, you're going to lose. Doesn't matter that the other team's not hitting the ball much at all coming into the series. We saw the most pronounced warts of this baseball team sap whatever little momentum they had built from the series win over the Yankees and the game one win against the Royals. And it all goes down the drain. And Saturday, it was the utter ineptitude of being able to hit left-handed pitching, both starters and relievers. And Sunday, it was, if you're going to take Kyle Gibson and Charlie Morton and pitch them in the same game,
that's fun.
And throw Bowman in there as a cherry on top. Should have kept Blewett.
That's weeks ago now.
You're probably going to get your brains beat in. And as much as the Orioles swung the bats well, 4 solo shots is not probably going to get it done. And it's especially not going to get it done when your staff gives up 7 the other way and they're not all solo shots. But, like, you know, this is a Mike Elias special. All he wanted to do was have them get better against lefties because everything else is going to take care of itself from within. They now have a 501 OPS against lefties, worst in baseball. The team slash line against lefties, 179, 261, 240. I mean, you want to talk about complete and utter failure. Thanks, Mike. And you couple that with him not fortifying for rainy days, him wasting money on Morton, who should be released. Charlie Morton should be released before he gets on that plane to Minnesota. If you're serious about winning, if you actually give a damn about your product and you want to send a message to your locker room that you care, he's got to go. And you waited too long to sign Kyle Gibson, and he's still very much a work in progress. In the meantime, you lose a winnable series against a team that came in here really scuffling to hit the baseball.
Just clarification, six of the Royals' seven home runs were solo shots as well. The last one was not. So. Yeah.
And but they weren't all. They weren't all solos. Yeah. All yours were solos.
Yeah. They hit seven.
And this was a Royals team that came in with 15 home runs, dead last in baseball, heading into this series. 15. Seven yesterday. It's unbelievable. But look, we talked up a lot of this back end of the bullpen, the A team, as we call it. And Brian Baker's been really, really good. He didn't have it. Yennier Cano, he's been really, really good. He didn't have it. But focusing on the Charlie Morton of it all, for him to come in at that point when it's a two-run game, I just almost felt like you're waving the white flag type situation. Where how much confidence do you think those other guys on the field had in Charlie Morton to get the job done at that situation? And then the offense to come back in the bottom of the inning to show a little fight, and you tack on a run there. We're not confident in Gregory Soto. I get that. I'm not saying that Soto is going to come in and slam the door shut.
He's Randy Johnson compared to Charlie Morton.
You can't go to Charlie Morton at that point of the game.
Well, Charlie Morton right now is in the role that Suarez would have been in.
Is he really, though? They're forcing him there.
He just pitched two and a third innings a couple days ago.
But they expect Suarez to get outs. This guy,
I'm saying, they have, when this thing was set up before Suarez got hurt, we thought they were going to have Keegan Aiken as a bulk guy from the left side and Suarez as a bulk guy from the right side.
But they don't even believe Charlie Morton's a bulk guy at this point.
I don't know what they believe. I don't know about believing. I believe they're paying him $15 million and they're trying to get blood from the stone.
Well, they're morons for doing that.
And I believe if you're the skipper and you tried to pump this guy up because even though it was ugly and it could have been uglier, he managed to get you 7 outs the other day. And he's the only thing. They know that Soto, as a lefty-lefty guy, might survive. Soto trying to get 6 outs out of Soto against that lineup, the way they were hitting the ball, he obviously thought was asinine. So let me take a shot with this other thing. Now, are either of those tenable? No, but like that's the decisions that this manager had in the moment. Charlie Morton is the third highest paid guy on this baseball team. No, second. No, third. Eflin.
O'Neill. Yeah.
Morton.
Yeah.
And it's clear that the mandate's coming from above that I'm not cutting this guy and you find a way to salvage him. So, like, what do you want him to do?
Well, you heard the press conference afterwards. I think it was our IA Hall of Fame buddy, Jacob Calvin-Meyer, asking him about Charlie Morton. He said we're not getting rid of him. He's going to continue to get opportunities.
So if you're Brandon Hyde, what do you, like, so you, now, again, if this was a serious organization run by a major league caliber general manager, you would admit defeat and stop undermining what's left of the sort of morale and chutzpah and fight of your baseball team by running people out there who have no business being in the major leagues. But he doesn't want to look bad to his billionaire. He's got convinced he's the smartest guy in the room. So Brandon Hyde's got to wear it. But this is on Mike Elias. And we'll play the clips at 3 o'clock. But Mike Elias had a whole lot to say before the start of another series. And then they came out and peed on their leg 2 out of 3 times. So did he need to say something? Yeah. Does he inspire anybody to do anything but want to throw up on their shoes? No.
Jackson Holliday's not throwing up on his shoes, though. He can't play against lefties, though.
Jackson Holliday was hitting before the series.
Yeah, I know, but he continues to hit. He's been hitting since mid-April.
That's great. Jackson Holliday, we're going to talk a lot about Jackson Holliday on the show tomorrow.
Yeah.
Don't worry. He's in the rundown early and often.
Yeah.
But this was a series that they really needed against a wounded team at home and a chance to establish yourself as maybe starting to turn a corner. They didn't do that. Minnesota is scuffling even more than the Royals in some ways. But I will say this. They send their three best starters out there against these guys. So, you're not going to get Ober and you're not going to get Paddock, who look like they're complete garbage right now. You're going to get their three best starters. But what happened Saturday is shameful in that you just knew they were just going to bring in lefties. Like, I mean, no one's going to do anything against them.
Well,
and then yesterday was shameful because you're running pitchers out there of no business being in the major leagues. Kyle Gibson should be making his final tune-up stop at Norfolk. And Charlie Morton should be being paid a whole lot of money to go play with his kids.
It's bad. By the way, Jacob Calvin-Meyer, you referenced earlier, had a tweet I'm trying to find. Here it is. Sandy Koufax in 1963 posted a 1.88 ERA, 0.875 whip, and a 10.7 B-war, and was named the NL Cy Young and MVP. MLB hitters posted a 501 OPS off Koufax that year. Orioles hitters have a 501 OPS versus left-handed pitching. So they're making every lefty look like Sandy Koufax in his prime.
Like I said, it's pretty shameful.
It's
and they're 2-9 against lefties, and they're 7 games under 500. So do the math. But teams are noticing.
Yeah. Oh, I would say
they're not even worried about the lefty righty splits. Like the way I'm watching Quintero, I'm like, he's just going to bring. I'm looking at the lineup. I'm like, he's going to bring in a lefty reliever. Like, why would you not bring in a lefty reliever?
They can't hit lefties. It's in their head at this point. Hey, we have a huge Monday show. Get you started for the week. Guess why? Jonah Schaefer, Ravens had rookie minicamp yesterday. Beltway Ben was there. We'll get his thoughts as well. But Jonah Schaefer joins us at 4. Cordell Woodland talking Ravens and O's. He was out there at Ravens rookie minicamp as well at 5. And we'll talk O's. Rock Kabatko. Are we starting to press the panic button about the Orioles as they head to Minnesota? We'll ask Rock at 5:30.
Yeah, we will definitely hear what Harbs had to say about the kicking situation. We will hear from Mike Green what he was and was not willing to say about the allegations made against him in his past. Jonas Schaefer has a great story, mm-hmm. talking to a lot of coaches who know Mike Green well, going all the way back to high school. You should check that out in the banner. We'll talk to Jonas at 4. As you said, Cordell and Beltway Ben were out there. We will talk to them. And it's bounce back fallback day.
Ah, it's a streak continue.
Can the greatest current streak in Baltimore sports continue?
Coming
I feel
up
pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good, Bone.
I don't remember, but
Bone's trying to give me his poker face.
Yeah. He doesn't have a
poker face.
I think I won.
Have a poker face.
I think I won. Yeah, looking at his face, I think I won.
He does not have
I think
a poker
the streak's
face.
Alive.
Yeah. Coming up next, we'll look at Kyle Gibson, who was better. How could he be worse than he was in his first outing? But still wasn't good. We'll recap next here on The Fan.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1. On the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tough day. Thought we swung the bat well. I'm happy about that, but we had a tough time on the mound keeping the ball in the ballpark. Thought he was okay. You know, he just made that bad pitch to Waters there, open base. And besides that, though, we had him in the 85-90 pitch range. He got to 81. But besides that one pitch, I thought it was pretty good.
That's Brandon Hyde after the game talking about his starter, Kyle Gibson. 4 innings, 5 hits, just 1 walk, 3 earned runs, 3 strikeouts, gave up a home run. So the good, he did get through the first inning without giving up a run, which was much better than the first time. He had only given up 1 run through 3.
He did not give up 4 home runs in his first 11 pitches.
No. So that
cleared that hurdle.
So he was better than he was his first start. Any reason for optimism? He looked like the feel was a little better, but obviously 3 runs in 4 innings, not good.
Yeah. He's not ready for the major leagues. I told you what I saw in Aberdeen, and we all saw what happened against the Yankees, and this is a lesser lineup, and you know, he did not start nearly as horrifically. I mean, we're really grading on a curve here, but I'll give him that. But like, you know, 23% called strike and whiff rate, all right, then you better be getting a lot of soft contact and a lot of soft ground balls, otherwise you're in trouble. And that was not the case. And when they made contact, they made a lot of loud contact. And he should not be in a major league rotation right now, but he's going to be.
They have no choice.
Yeah,
they're going to look at this as progress. Now, I would say you went from abject, utter failure to just sort of household garden variety failure, but it's failure's failure. You know, we can talk. It's like we went from an F plus to an F, like or whatever, an F to an F plus. I don't know, but that's where we are. Do I think he can get by on pure stuff? Absolutely not. You know, Velo, his four seam was down. He threw 1 4-seam fastball. Not sure what that was all about. But this was a guy who was topping out with the four seam, which he threw a whole lot the last time, at around 92.5. I have major concerns about him being able to give you even five innings of competent ball anytime soon. I just do. I mean, we can say it's early. We can say it's this or that. His sinker is his preferred pitch right now. He's thrown it 55 times. The league's batting 430 and slugging 800 off of it. Like, I mean, what do you want me to say?
But Jason, he's got to be able to provide that at length, because even in 2023, when he was here, and if you look at his numbers, the ERA was inflated. Did he have some moments? Absolutely. But he pitched, what, 193 innings? Yesterday, it was a step in the right direction. If you want to look at it with a glass half full of some orange Kool-Aid, he was one strike away from getting through four innings, just giving up one run, because Drew Waters had that two out, two strike, two RBI single to drive it in. But it's not all on him. I mean, he's just in this poor situation because of the roster construction. He didn't get eased into this thing. His first team he faced was the Yankees, following 9 days prior to his last start in Aberdeen. He has not had a smooth transition to get ready, and with no spring training.
It's absolutely brilliant, whoever decided to go high A, then 9 days off, then major leagues, is for a guy who's 37 years old.
And this was, of course, a much softer lineup, even though if you just watched yesterday, you wouldn't think that.
No.
But he's got to be able to give him innings.
There was nothing precluding them from going out and signing Kyle Gibson 3 hours after Grayson Rodriguez couldn't throw 91 miles an hour in the bullpen in Fort Myers, Florida. Was that February? I believe that was late February, March. They waited to sign this guy until right before they broke camp. So no, it's not on Kyle Gibson. But like, Kyle Gibson cares. Kyle Gibson knows what this team needs. Kyle Gibson in his heart must know he wasn't given the adequate runway to show better. But, like, I feel embarrassed for Kyle Gibson. You know, I feel like Kyle Gibson deserves
better. Well, you can tell
better.
He's a competitor. And he's
absolutely. And so they bring him in part because, you know, you have plenty of people shilling for them, talking about intangible this, intangible that. When the league's hitting 430 off your best pitch and slugging 800 off of it, I got news for you. You can't help anybody with anything. You can't say anything to anybody. Like, the whole idea that, well, he's going to make them better just by being here. Nah, when they throw you to the wolves like this and you produce like this, and I'm using produce in air quotes, when you get your brains beat in like this, yeah, no, it's slop is slop.
Now the next question is, though, who the heck starts Wednesday? Because that's still listed as TBA because they push back Dean a day after getting hit with the 103-mile-per-hour ball.
Well, we don't think it's any chance that that's Eflin.
Could be. He
that was
yesterday.
Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. Maybe Eflin.
Well, Dean's listed for Thursday. It's Cade Tuesday because they wanted to give Dean an extra day.
Maybe it's an opener?
I have a feeling Eflin was pitching okay, pitching well. He had a normal spring training. He made, what, three starts before he went down?
Mm-hmm.
He pitched well in Aberdeen, threw four innings, I think. Like, with the way they ramp, like, don't even ramp guys up, just throw them back. Like, how much more do we think he's going to do down there?
Well, he's already come out and said that he only wants that to be a one-time thing. He's ready to come back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to think that they would go ahead and do that because, again, the alternative is more Gibson, more Morton, more Brandon Young. I mean,
and I don't even think Young's been down long enough at this point to be recalled.
He'll take an injury.
Unless there's another injury or something.
Yeah. Okay,
but, like, McDermott needs to be built up. Eflin already had a normal spring. Eflin made some quality starts. Like, I mean, yeah, Wednesday after just pitching on Sunday is
not ideal.
Would seem to be too soon. But how many pitches did Morton throw? Didn't he two and two and a third the last time out. He had to throw.
Morton threw 24 pitches
24,
yesterday.
24, yes. That was... No, but I mean the time before
that.
Yeah,
time
before
that was two and a third. Yeah.
Like, I'm just trying to think time before that, before, you know, how much time between.
He threw 43 pitches in that game against
the Yankees. Yeah, and I think Eflin threw 48 yesterday.
But the game against the Yankees was last Tuesday.
Tuesday, and he pitched again Sunday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So 4 days. I think Eflin's back ASAP. I think if they're serious, if they were a serious organization, you just have to get rid of Charlie Morton. You can't keep doing this to your ball club. You made a mistake. It was a huge mistake.
You did it last year too when they hung on.
Do you compound it or do you eliminate it?
Jason, they made a mistake last year with Craig Kimbrel, and yes, difference is Kimbrel did give them a couple good months, but it was pretty clear post All-Star break he was done, and they kept running him out there. They didn't get rid of him until September, I think.
I understand that, but it's easier to hide him than it is this guy. And guess what? Last year, they had the best record in baseball on June 20th. This is a different scenario. They're already chasing. They don't have that luxury. They haven't built up the collateral where we could have, you know, this guy could blow three or four saves in 2 weeks and we'll still be like, no. They don't have that luxury. They know they don't have that luxury. We've already seen it play out how quick Gunner, and they do this in general anyway, but just start counting the guy. Gunner came back too soon. Westy came back too soon. Gibson came back too soon. Yeah. Like, Eflin's about to do it.
By the way, Westy was running around yesterday on the field. He's probably going to be back when his 10 days are up. So, and I don't know if that'll be too soon, but we'll find out. Hey, we'll get back to the Orioles in a little bit. But coming up next, some purple rain in the forecast. Rookie minicamp media availability yesterday. Beltway Ben was there. He'll tell us what he saw as the rookies were out on the field at one winning drive. That's next here on the Fan. Ravens have day two of rookie minicamp going on at the Castle. No media availability today, but I've seen them post some videos and pictures. But yesterday was media availability for rookie minicamp. Our own Beltway Ben Hall was there. And Beltway Ben, what were your main takeaways from yesterday?
Yeah, there's not a ton to take away from just kind of stuff they were doing, but I thought Malachi Starks, as expected, you know, he was talking a lot. He looked very comfortable out there, and it looks like he was the leader that they said he was, starting as a true freshman in college and one of the best defenses in the country, you could tell. Emory Jones, it was news that he was out. I mean, the offensive line came out, and everybody's kind of asking, where's Jones at? And he came out a little later, had his jersey on, but wasn't doing anything. Then Harbaugh talking about it was like pretty clear that it's going to be a while. Because then they doubled down and said, do you think he'll be out here for OTAs? And then Harvest is like, we're not going to rush it back.
He said training camp, but
yeah,
we'll see.
He said we're not going to rush it back, so hopefully training camp. But and then Peebles, we're talking about Peebles a little bit, looks definitely a little undersized. Compared to the other defensive linemen that were there. He was aggressive, very antsy when they were going through drills and stuff, looked very excited to be out there, but he definitely looked undersized.
Yeah, he looked undersized to me for a linebacker, let alone a D tackle. Like, that is an interesting body
tall,
type.
Right?
That is an interesting body type. But I'm sure they have a plan for him. But for that to be the one, and I'm using air quotes, D tackle they took in this whole potentially generational D tackle draft, that does interest me.
They do zig when others zag. Remember that generational wide receiver draft a couple years back? They didn't take a wide receiver in that draft, I don't think, until late.
Yeah.
They're a zagger team. They don't zig. They zag.
No, they're zaggers.
They are definitely zaggers. Obviously, in Beltway, Ben, you're not going to see a whole lot at a rookie minicamp. What'd you think of the looper?
He definitely have a strong leg. He wasn't kicking from deep, but everything he hit was to the back of the net. Harbaugh was pretty confident he didn't miss one. And they had two kickers out there. It could have been the other guy. And they were on the far field. It was like a college extra point that was missed. Again, Harbaugh was pretty positive that Looper didn't miss any. And
Looper.
But he's officially I talked to Vinny. I was pretty confident he missed one. But again, it's hard to tell.
Well, Ken, you were bringing up that on one of his scouting reports, he gets a little amped up
he's
at
been
the
no,
holder.
Yes,
did
I'm
that
ready.
Happen, Ben?
Saving that one for Stout,
saving
I think.
That for, Stout.
For the real thing. Let Jordan Stout hear some of his ire. Yeah, I guess Tyler Loop, one of the things, I think it was the NFL.com profile, but maybe one of the other ones that said one of the negatives, he will get after his holder.
Is that a negative? I don't know. If it's warranted,
yeah,
it's warranted.
Yeah, but you know how they do.
Mess with the Looper.
The Looper can't be perfect. The Looper just got here. We can't be looking for perfection out of the Looper. Well, do we have Harbs talking about the Looper and his kicking situation?
Let's see. John Harbaugh on. Let's see. Where's the Looper?
I did find his NFL.com makes it known when he's disappointed with the holder.
Got to hold him accountable.
That is an interesting clip there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There it was. NFL.com. Yeah. Bellway Ben, let me know when you have him on the Looper. But give me a thumbs up. But yeah, he did. Seem very confident.
Well, he brought up referenced Justin Tucker's salary.
Yes. Right?
And then he referenced the overall production at the kicking position.
Football decision.
It sounded to me like they were starting to lay the foundation for the how and the why Justin Tucker will be terminated for calls, just not, or I shouldn't say for calls, but just not the when.
Here's Harbaugh on Justin Tucker.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, Justin's been in the building the last couple of weeks, kicking and everything, and we've had a chance to talk a little bit. Been working hard. From a standpoint of the investigation and all that, I mean, we don't know anything. I mean, we haven't been given any information, and that, as it should be, you know, it's all done the way it's done. So we don't know anything along those lines, so we can't make any decisions based on that. Every decision we make has to be based on football. There's a lot of layers to that. You know, you've got a rookie kicker in here. You took him in the sixth round, early in the sixth round. He's a talented guy. Just from a football standpoint, salary cap, you know, all the different things that you just take into consideration. Whatever we decide to do over the next few weeks will be based on football.
So I'll repeat again. I'm shocked he's still here.
It's bizarre.
But he's gone before training camp.
Certainly seems like they've been lawyered up and they're dotting their I's and crossing their T's and getting you in line for, and more to the point, Tucker in line for a decision that, again, we're stunned they didn't make sooner. I find, again, some of what he brought up to there to be incredibly interesting. And as I brought up last week, I don't think you do the Looper any solids. If you really do believe in the Looper, having him in the building with this guy to me is a recipe for disaster.
Yes.
Letting Tucker mess with him.
Correct.
Letting Tucker strut his stuff. Letting Tucker show how tight he already is with the snapper and the holder and everybody. If you drafted this kid and now he's bringing up high sixth round pick, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
He's trying to further justify you know, you take a guy in the high sixth round. That's not just taking him. It wasn't a sixth round comp pick.
Yeah.
It was a high sixth round.
Well, let's be clear. The top of the sixth round is kind of like the first round for kickers. The middle of the sixth round.
There you go.
Yeah, that's
the, and there's 900 picks in the sixth round because all the comps.
Correct. Yeah. There's levels.
But sure. I think they have to understand that and in their own way, wink back and acknowledge the dynamic I was bringing up last week, which is it's not like you're walking into this guy's shadow and they released him 3 months ago and everybody's had time to digest it. He's literally in there strutting his stuff.
Well, you heard Harb say few weeks, and he's not one to throw out timelines, but a few weeks is OTAs because their first set of OTAs, I want to say May 26, somewhere around that. Is Justin Tucker here for that?
Up until those comments from Harbaugh, I felt like they were going to really play this out competitively. The way he spoke there sounded like Sasha and the lawyers got to him. Or like, when they ask you about this, we need to start being on the record now with not just we're hiding behind the investigation, but we don't know when that investigation is going to wrap up. And in the meantime, here's some football things we need to work through because we don't have infinite cap space and we're not going to carry more than one kicker. And we did take this kid kind of high for a kicker.
Yeah, high sixth round.
Yeah, maybe, and Harbs has been here for a while. And maybe he has brought it up in the past, but bringing up salary cap this deep into the offseason about a player still on your roster is very interesting.
And are you willing to live with it until post June 1? You know what I mean?
And then you've waited this long,
right?
Jeez.
Do you just wait till after that for?
You don't really need below the Jets.
You get the designation.
Yeah, and the Jets have shown you can designate him. Yeah. Like,
right, but I'm saying they didn't like. Didn't they use that on? Did they use that on Marcus?
Well,
or
did they use it on
somebody?
You get two. They did use it on Marcus,
right?
But
they could have used
two.
Another one.
You get two.
Maybe they still do.
Yeah,
maybe they do that in two weeks. Or
I
would not have these two in the building competing head to head in person, sitting in the same meeting rooms. Like I would think. That's a good way to undermine the kid you think is your future at this position.
It does you no favors letting Justin Tucker hang out with this kid because Justin Tucker's going to try to win the job. He's going to treat this kid like garbage.
He's in the business of Justin Tucker.
Yes.
Period.
He's going to treat this kid like garbage.
That's it.
Coming up next, the moment you've been waiting for. Mike Green, Ravens second round pick. Remember, usually the draft picks speak to the media via Zoom right after they get drafted. Mike Green did not speak on Friday. He did not speak then, and we will hear from him next here on The Fan.
Every team asks me, and I've been completely open about everything. And it's something that I had to go through, and I got through it. And like I said, this point forward, I'm just focused on moving on with my career at the Ravens.
That's Mike Green speaking for the first time as a member of the Ravens, talking about being questioned about accusations against him in pre-draft process. And he says every team he talked to asked him about it. To be clear, there were two sets of accusations, one in high school, one at Virginia. He never had any charges filed against him in either case, though.
No, and I don't believe we'll ever know exactly what transpired in either case. We do know that this young man will have a different sort of spotlight on him, and he already did through the draft process. And this is a top 15 talent who fell more than 12 and 15 spots into the second round. I read Jonas's piece in the Banner.
We talked to Jonas
at 4. Jonas talked to several of his high school coaches. He talked to people, I think, who may have coached against him in high school. He spoke to position coaches and head coaches of his at college, and that includes some people at Virginia and Marshall. There's a lot of people who are willing to put their name to this young man and vouch for him with with vigor.
Yeah, confidence.
It was also interesting to me, though, some of these people said that the Ravens didn't talk to them about Mike Green at all through the process. So that, you know, I found a little odd. And they did concede that they talked to some teams who it was clear these teams were not totally comfortable with drafting Mike Green, at least not drafting him in the first day of the draft. And look, he's walking a fine line here where you have to acknowledge that this is why you're a Baltimore Raven with pick number 59. That those circumstances, those allegations are why this happened. He also is not going to want to live in the past, and he's not going to want to dwell in the past. And legally and otherwise, I'm sure he's been told there's only so much you should say. Let's face it. The team bought themselves, 10 days to coach him up before this happened, right? They didn't make him available the night he was drafted. Rookie minicamps basically, over a week later.
So they only want
him saying so much about it.
Yeah, and after talking about it yesterday, unless something else happens or something else comes up, that's probably the last time he's going to speak on the record in a podium sense.
Yeah, unless there is additional reporting or things that come forward about what's happened in the past, or unless there are anything else that happens to him in the future, I would think that, he and the team would look at this as we addressed it. Now, is he really saying anything here? No. Did I expect him to say much of anything? No. Does he sound like this kid clearly... I think has some smarts to him. He's in his tone. It sounds to me like someone who very much understands sort of the gravity of the situation.
More from Mike Green speaking yesterday. Talks about falling in the draft.
Yeah, of course. Of course, it's tough. Just knowing that you got first round potential, and just knowing that regardless what team that you was going to go to, that you just wanted a chance to get out of the first round, and then that was a goal that I set for myself. Didn't really get to that goal, but coming to the Ravens was a blessing in disguise, and I live by that, and I mean that. I honestly can say I don't think there's a better program or franchise that I can be a part of than the Ravens. So I'm blessed to be here. It's an honor. I'm ready to get to work.
I think he used the term blessing in disguise a few times. And then we've had people from the outside looking in say the Ravens' stability, it's a good organization for him. Jason, what do you think of that part of it?
I think there are obviously a lot of people who are established in this league and as some of the best at what they do. I have a hard time. And then, like, are there lesser organizations? Absolutely. Are there less winning organizations, less organizations with less established coaches, less proven coaches? Yes. I can't tell you whose player development department is necessarily better than whose. You have to really kind of have inside information to know what these kids are being told, how they reach the kids, what things they've nipped in the bud, what things they've allowed to fester. So I don't know how to sort of vouch for that.
The stability is inarguable, though. They're like,
no, but is that what's going to prevent somebody? I don't even know exactly what happened in these two instances.
Yes.
So I there were a lot of teams that could use a Mike Green football player on their roster who chose to abstain. Despite that, the Ravens ultimately did not anymore at pick 59. Would he have gone to pick 60, 61, 62, 63? And would those teams have been better equipped to handle it? I don't. How do you answer? I don't know. I do not know. I don't have that information.
It's also hard to say because the Ravens haven't really swam in these waters in terms of draft picks with these
Correct.
Type of accusations. So from that from that perspective, it is kind of difficult.
More from Mike Green, who spoke yesterday, talks about joining a team with strong defensive history.
It means a lot. This team has a lot of great culture that's been going around, and you got to think about the guys that's been through here: Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs, and so forth. It's just like it means a lot more since I'm a defensive player as well, and just seeing all those great defensive players walk through here, it means a little bit more for sure.
He was, and granted, it's obvious he's been coached up a little bit. I was impressed with Mike Green, the speaker. I didn't know
yes,
what to expect from him
neither.
At all. Yeah, so like and quite frankly, I was impressed with all three kids who spoke yesterday. And he is Peebles and Malachi Starks.
Yes. And again, like I any sort of impressions or things I have, excuse me, the number of people who were willing, who know this young man, and not just Eric DaCosta, I spent 90 minutes talking to him. People who have had him come to their office at 8 a.m. and come to their house at 8 p.m. and have spent private moments with him and have had him confide in them. A number of those people spoke to Jonas Schaefer and were overwhelmingly emphatic about this young man's character and judgment and leadership. So I put a whole lot more into, you know what I mean, into that than anything that happens in the first sort of staged media availability after the Ravens have sort of coached him up. And again, I would implore you, check out Jonas's piece in the banner.
Before we step out, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the Ravens did sign a swing tackle over the
yes.
weekend. Joseph Noteboom, who was most recently he spent his career with the Rams before now signing with the Ravens. Jason, your thoughts on the veteran swing tackle?
They need one, and especially after we find out that Emory Jones is going to be dealing with major shoulder injury for a period of time. And if they're saying we think he's ready for camp, he might not be ready for camp. And I already said I didn't even – before we knew about the extent of any injury, I think we all were in agreement.
Yeah.
He can't just be given the job.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was something they had to do. I'm glad they did it. We'll see what they do to fortify the defensive side of things. They should still be in those markets.
Coming up next, time for some necessary roughness. Mike Elias spoke to the media pregame on Friday. What did he have to say and what did we think of it? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.